If you're gay, then you're gay. Don't pretend that you're straight. You could be who you are any day of the week. You are unlike the others, so strong and unique. We're all with you.
If you're straight, well, that's great. You can help procreate and make gay little babies for the whole human race. Make a world we can live in where the one who you love's not an issue. Cause we're all somewhere in the middle. We're all just looking for love to change the world. And we're all here.
Thanks for tuning in, and welcome to IMRU Radio Magazine, out front and out loud since 1974, striving each week to amplify the voices of the LGBTQIA2S+ communities. I'm David Hunt in Raleigh, North Carolina. Barack Obama once said, "Let me tell you something. I'm from Chicago. I don't break." Both guests tonight are also residents of the Windy City, and probably unbreakable. Keith Butler is an actor and author of Little Black Gay Boy, an unapologetic memoir of surviving, coming out, and recovering. But first, singer Levi Kreiss effortlessly passed as Matthew McConaughey's better-looking brother in the turn-of-the-century film Fracture. But has since shown he's much more than a pretty face, with countless albums, touring in the national company of Rent, and winning the Tony for Broadway's Million Dollar Quartet. He's now back in L.A., starring in the lauded company of Hadestown and catching up with old friend Michael Taylor Gray.
Today, we have performer, actor, songwriter, singer, Tony Award winner, all-around fabulous human being, Levi Kreiss.
Bye. Michael, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for having me.
Again? Do we know each other?
It's been years. many years.
Many years. Over 21 years, actually.
Yeah.
Because we just celebrated the 21st anniversary of Southern Baptist Sissies.
Yeah. I can't believe that.
And our mutual friend.
So long ago. But
right?
Such an impact on both of our lives, for sure.
And we're going to get into that.
Yes.
But first of all, I want to ask, I always like to ask, how do you identify within the LGBTQI2S+ community?
I like to answer that as a spiritual activist. Ooh. Not in the traditional way that you're wanting me to answer that question, because I especially recently have been so excited about, and this is right off the back of what you mentioned about Southern Baptist Sissies, is I love that a community who has a lot of religious wounds can reclaim their spirituality and drop all of the identifiers and see ourselves as spiritual beings capable of anything that we could possibly imagine.
Yeah, there's empowerment in both mindsets.
Yeah.
You know, I think the letters, which bothered a lot of people, it's mm-hmm. about being seen. It's about being visible. It's about coming out of the shadows for some.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Absolutely. But I'm always someone who bucks against any sort of identification, any sort of box you want to put me into. I want to say yes and. You think I'm this, I'm going to do this and this and this and this. You think that I'm this, I am also this, this and this and this. I love that it's providing visibility for mm-hmm. those who have been disenfranchised. But at the same time, for my people who I stand next to, those disenfranchised, I want them to have a mindset of unlimitedness.
Yeah, and for some, labels have just been nothing but a tool that's meant to keep you down.
Which is why I go for that answer. Yeah.
I had a feeling.
As much as I can.
Mm-hmm. How has where you grew up influenced who you are as an artist and as an individual?
Certainly gospel music, Americana music, the influences of the South remain with me always. And even when you hear the gospel flavor of Stained Glass Window, which was the theme song to a play that you and I both did called Southern Baptist Sissies, one of the more well-known songs that I have in my catalog, I can't escape the musical influences. I can't escape that flavor that is just always going to find itself into my world as a singer-songwriter. I think that it also informs me as an actor. I also think that as someone who has survived 6 years of conversion therapy, being denied my education at a private Southern Baptist college, being denied and walked, kicked off campus, being denied my employment through 8 major record labels, surviving a gay bashing in Hamilton Park, New Jersey. I mean, like, there are deep wounds. I've had to turn that pain into power. And so for me, the landscape of Tennessee that set me up to have to deal with so much conflict has made me rich in emotional intelligence, and I think actually makes me a rich actor because of it. You got to find ways to turn that into power, you know.
There's a rage way down inside me, a fire that's branded my soul, and it leaves me as one of the many, with a hate so hard to control. But I've seen that hate is not the answer. There's a time when we all must decide children, let's give up the fight. Oh, consider this for a moment or two. I'm some red. You are ocean blue. We're just two, not many colors, and a explanations to demote my position with the God. Oh, but I've discovered a divine resolution.
You really are living the language that you speak.
I try, and I'm certainly, it's an effort every day.
No, you're a doer.
Yes.
You're a doer. Yeah. You're not a trier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're past the try, honey.
So, I'm obsessively a doer, and my discipline is crazy. And the thing that I've recently realized is I've actually never looked back at that little boy and said, you don't have to accomplish, push, be anything for me to love you. And I think that's the thing I'm learning right now, to really unconditionally love me without me having to be an overcomer or a victor or successful or any of that. Like, I can let the drill sergeant walk out the door and say, I love you for who you are, not for what you do, what you try to become. You don't have to be anything else. That's hard for me. I don't know if it's hard for you or maybe listeners out there, but like, I just really have come to that epiphany lately.
It's a challenge for everyone because you have so many forces and forms of communication that surround you daily, telling you who you should be, according to somebody else. But like I said, you're living it every day. So it's really inspiring. I want you to tell our listeners why you're going to be in Los Angeles, and then let's go back to the time when you first arrived in L.A. and your personal journey from there to now. From then to now.
I remember I came to Los Angeles with a transplant of Southerners, and one day we were walking down Melrose Avenue, and I saw this just shocking image of this beautiful man with his arms outstretched, symbolizing the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, wearing little tidy whities. And over the top of this image, it said Southern Baptist Sissies. And my friends wanted to go in and see it. It was starting in 30 minutes. Girlfriend of mine, Tanya, had heard about it before, had maybe met the writer and director, and was like, let's just go on in there and see what that's about. And everything that was within my conversion therapy beingness was like, no, I cannot do this. I went in, and during intermission, I was in a fetal position, bawling my eyes out. I thought I was the only one. And I felt a little tap on the shoulder, and someone said, are you okay? And I turned around to this person. I said, do you like this thing? And he goes, well, I'm the writer, so I'm partial.
You sounded just like Del Shores in that.
Exactly. And it was Del Shores, our friend Del Shores. Yeah. And so the great thing about this and how it relates to like my journey as an actor is not long after that, I had my first experience as an actor auditioning for the Broadway National Tour of Rent and got the role of Roger, my first job, my first audition. And
let me stop you right there, because you sounded like a little surprised about that success that you got in that first audition. Let me tell you, there were two people I got to meet who were sort of became friends of the cast or crew of Southern Baptist Sissies that Del Shores wrote way back when. You were one of those two people that I thought was going to be a big star. And the other one was one of the stars of The Help and friends of director Tate Taylor, Octavia Spencer.
Yeah.
I knew it. The first time you opened your mouth, your fingers hit that piano. I said, that's a star right there.
Oh, you are so sweet. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And you have that it factor, but you're so driven, and you've taken everything that what you're talking about, you've taken all that pain and turned it into power. And I could see even in the early days of that transition of taking it and making it into power, you were channeling it. And you were bound and determined for you to gain control of it and use it for good.
Oh, it's so interesting going back, Michael, to these days, because there's a part of me that has a little heart hurt around the fact that period of time, that boy you describe playing the piano and singing that you see, having his 20s ahead of him, spending all of his 20s presented with some of the most amazing fame-making opportunities that some people will never see. But because when my sexuality would come to light, everything would disappear. And it was a different time back then. It was late 90s through the 2000s. Marketing departments at record labels didn't know what to do. You had to hide it. You had to hide it. And I look back and think, boy, I wonder what that boy that you describe could have been had he not had 8 to 10 years of roadblocks because of his sexuality, you know? And like, you're right, though, we then take our story to LGBT media, LGBTQIA+ media. We begin to talk about the stories that we all have in common, you know, and turn it into power and make something of it. Looking back at that moment, I just wish that I could tell that boy a lot of things that he's going to need to know when the world proves their bigotry.
Even if you had told him that, he might, I don't believe you.
as cocky as that little kid was, like he wouldn't listen to anything. He was a little brat.
Levi also won the Tony Award in 2010 for playing Jerry Lee Lewis in Broadway's Million Dollar Quartet.
We'll be back with the rest of Michael Taylor Gray's conversation with Levi Kreiss after this quick break. Don't go away.
A Friend of Dorothy, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Back in the time when homosexuality was illegal in the U.S., the question, "Are you a friend of Dorothy?" was sometimes used to determine one's sexual orientation without others knowing its meaning. The phrase dates back to the World War II era, and just after the MGM movie The Wizard of Oz was released in 1939. The name Dorothy refers to the character Dorothy Gale in the movie played by the legendary actress and gay icon Judy Garland. In the movie, she sings Over the Rainbow with the lyrics, "If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why oh why can't I?" Certainly, these words have been uttered by gay people who have experienced the loneliness of the closet and second-class citizenship status. So if someone asks, "Are you a friend of Dorothy?" Now you know. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Roby Martin.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens from Noah's Ark, and you're listening to IMRU.
IMRU.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Leo. It's an honor. You're one of, Hollywood's brightest young stars. I particularly liked you in that boat movie. I was wondering if maybe you'd like to come back to my place. I think you're kind of pretty. What do you mean you're not interested? You can't say no to me. I'm, I'm, I, I, Jimmy Stewart. I'm a movie star. You don't say no to Jimmy Stewart, you stupid little pretty boy. What Jimmy Stewart wants, Jimmy Stewart gets. Got it?
Welcome back. I'm David Hunt, and you're listening to IMRU Radio Magazine. Now back to Michael Taylor Gray in conversation with Levi Kreis.
How in the world did Brenda Lee become a musical mentor of yours? Let me finish this sentence now.
Okay.
How in the world did Brenda, I'm sorry, Brenda Lee become a musical mentor of yours when you were just a little tyke back in Tennessee?
Okay, this is such a fun story. My mother grew up being the president of the Brenda Lee fan club in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. I mean, she has always had this connection to her music, fan of her music. One day Brenda Lee comes to Knoxville. My mom decides to go see her. My mom brings stacks of photo books full of articles and all kinds of stuff that Brenda herself had not seen, we found out, once my mom got to actually speak with her after the show.
That's a president of a fan club. That's a president.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
When you're showing the star stuff they've never even seen.
They've never even seen, yes.
Kudos to your mom.
They clicked personally. And so they actually continued. You know, my mom would show up at like the, Michael, do you remember what, every summer Nashville would have all the country music artists together.
It's a fan jubilee.
Okay, exactly. Well, so the president of her fan club would be there and everybody. So like she was began to more actively orbit Brenda's world because Brenda and her hit it off. Then I come out singing. Brenda's life.
Is.
Yeah, I mean like, yeah, just out of the womb. You know. And Brenda noticed and began to take me in and let me be around. And my mom would take me backstage and I would sit with her until finally Brenda had me on her tour bus for some of her tour dates and stuff. So this summer I would just be with her. And I saw her on stage and off be the classiest, most salt of the earth human being, very unmoved by the hype of the entertainment world, especially being who she is. She has every right to just be swept up in it and feel very much identified with a great deal of, you know, she's a legend.
Yeah.
Never was that way. And she kind of lent me a lot of good molding, I guess, over the years of knowing her and hopping back on her tour bus. And I mean, like the last I saw her, I got to sing at her kids' high school or something during some sort of event pre-graduation. She just had me get up and sing, and she was singing a few numbers with her. She's just kind of been there, and she's a huge influence, not even just from the musical standpoint. I don't do rockabilly music, but more from the industry. More from like how to navigate that world.
How to walk in her shoes, so to speak.
Yeah.
Did you ever walk in her shoes?
How to walk in her pumps, her tiny pumps.
So they were tiny. They were tiny, but they were mighty.
Not even mighty.
I know. I was scouring your great website, levikreis.com. Very chock full of tidbits. I was wondering, why did you transfer from Vanderbilt University, where you had received a full ride scholarship?
Yes.
And then
yes.
To Belmont University in the same town of Nashville.
Vanderbilt was, okay, so this is a fun story. I was composing classical music probably by 12, 13, 14. I was ripping out like composing classical. My mom decided I needed to audition for Vanderbilt University. She got a hold of their primary piano teacher, their professor, and had him listen to me as she holds the phone, pulling the cord over from the nightstand, holding it over the piano, auditioning me on the phone. Well, they had me come in and evaluate me. I played for them in person and said, we're going to create a full scholarship for him as a pre-college program. He'll be able to take his college courses, college level credits, get into piano technique, music history, music theory, all that stuff in high school so that he can then transfer those credits when he graduates or like obviously they would say continue on with Vanderbilt. Yeah. So my sophomore, junior and senior year of high school, my granddaddy would, who worked over at the post office in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, would clock into work at 3 a.m. to start sorting the mail, work till about 10 a.m., pick me up every Monday and every Thursday at school, drive me 2.5 hours to Nashville. What? I would do all my classes during the day and would drive me back, and we wouldn't get in until 11:30 at night for 3 years.
Can we put him in a 3D printer?
Oh, I know.
Wow.
Him and my grandmother.
Salty
every Monday and every Thursday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, is your mom still with us? Is your mom still with us?
Yes, she is. Oh. Feisty as ever.
Okay, we're all going to adopt her because, my God. She wants to get somebody's attention. She gets their attention. She's the president of Brendley's fan club. She gets you a full ride scholarship to Vanderbilt just by holding the phone to your plane. I mean, wow.
She gets it done. She gets it done. So obviously, to answer your question, once I completed the senior year there of my pre-college curriculum, Belmont was where the music business was, the music industry. Everybody that we know in country and Christian and gospel music went to school there.
That's where the career was.
I just transferred everything. Yeah, that's where the networking that would take me into the industry. That was the reason that I had a gospel record deal shortly after being at Belmont, which is when they, you know, my big story about being added to campus and the board of directors deliberating on whether or not to kick me out of college. And then an intern at the record label hears about that as I'm outed on campus. And so the record label drops me, you know, 10 songs into making the album.
Free Levi. You were the original Free Britney.
Oh, that's just not right.
That's just not right. That's such a don't say gay moment, really. Good grief. How did Hadestown national tour happen upon you?
Everybody hungry, everybody tired, everybody saved by the sweat of his brow. The wage is nothing, the work is hard, it's a graveyard in Hadestown.
Way down, Hadestown, way down underground.
I had a wonderful creative agent who saw the breakdown and said, I know my boy can sing that stuff, and let's get him in there. And the music, if you've heard the soundtrack at all, it's just very blues scale, very Americana. It's sort of in my sweet spot, like 100%. And while the Hermes that the world first got to know through Andre is very different from mine, the role, being true to the role as well, is in my wheelhouse as well. I feel like that role could have been made for me, in that being able to bring that wit, that dark humor, that energy, that vocal match between me and Aeneas' music, all of it, like, it excites me. It was just one of those roles that I feel like in some parallel universe, I would have been the person to originate it, because spending most of my time working on new works and not falling into a lot of, you know, I don't have a huge resume of like already existing roles, because I spend a lot of time on new works and originating certain things, and many of them the world never sees. But I kind of felt like, oh my God, this would have been something I would have wanted to originate. I would have been able to wrap myself around it so naturally. And so I just didn't want to not do the role, even though it was, you know, I've never been on tour other than my first job with Rent, which was years ago. Touring is exhausting.
Did you throw your hair back like Cher does when you said it's exhausting? Success is exhausting.
No, that would have been performative. I was crying a genuine tear when I said
really?
It.
It's not glycerin on your face?
No.
Okay. I know you.
But the truth is, it's like, I just creatively wanted to do it. And so they saw me and the creative team, and I knew that I brought something unique to it, and they thought so too, thankfully.
Well, you are originating it. You are originating. You don't have to be an originator. You don't have to originate to be an originator.
I am definitely recreating it, for sure.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you're making it your own, like they said on American Idol. Make it your own.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's good. Yes. You're going to be here in Los Angeles, April 26th to May 29th.
So excited, because you're going to be able to be there? You're going to come?
If there's a seat with my name on it, I'm going to sit in it. So I'm saying, I'll find a way in the door. I know my way around the building.
Well, see, I've just thought to myself, all the people that have had such influence on me, you know, us watching like Del Dickey perform and Beth Grant perform and Leslie Jordan and all of these in my world, they're like my little icons, right? Mm-hmm. And and in a lot of other people's worlds too. But it's like to be able to bring that role to LA and know that like my OG homies are showing up to see it, like that makes me so excited.
You know, you came to our show, Southern Baptist Sissies, and it was a bona fide hit. It was like the hit of the year. I remember the first day of rehearsal, you know, being told, what are you doing for the next year? Because this is what you'll be doing. And they were right. I was like, you know, Newell Alexander said that. I couldn't believe it when it came true. I was like, wow. But then when you walked in the door, just, you know, fresh off the bus, so to speak, you know, fresh to LA and just so much ahead of you. Yeah. I mean, there are no accidents. There are no coincidences whatsoever. Yeah. Your path was meant to be. And this role, like you said, you didn't originate it, you say, but you feel like it was written for you. That's not an accident. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're doing exactly what you need to do. But occasionally you do have bad habits. How is that for a segue?
How much do I love that transition? Yes, that snuck up on me. Yeah.
America, you're welcome. Okay. So, your latest album release, your 9th album, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Lives, you cat, you. Released March 20th, 2020. It's all original songs written by Levi Christ, except for a cover of George Michael's Faith. But I think if George was still with us, he would approve.
I hope so. Oh, please. That was so fun to do, man. You know, so different.
You're easy on the ear and the eye, so I think he would approve.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody's got a body like you, but I gotta think twice before I give my heart away. And I know all the games you play, because I play them too. But I need some time off from that emotion. Time to pick my heart up off the floor. Baby, when love comes down with our devotion. But it takes a strong man, baby. But I'm showing you the door. Cause I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith. No, I gotta have faith, the faith, the faith. I gotta have faith, the faith, the faith.
What's coming up for you? What do you want to do that you haven't done yet?
I am sort of on the earlier stages of creating my own musical. I have a book writer. I'm writing the music for it.
Can I see it?
Eventually. That's up to my book writer. But I do find that this experience of doing this and having it inspired by my life, and it also addresses a lot of issues for our community, many of which we've talked about already in this interview. I'm really looking forward to this. And so I will be finishing up my contract with Hadestown, and then I will be going straight into my own piece.
Gaily Forward, please.
Yeah.
Gaily Forward.
Yes.
No, I love that we have that in common. Yeah, because that's just wonderful. Yes. We're both writing musicals. Yeah. You know, but it's how we get, you write what you know and you get your stories out there. And there's no greater gift than, and then having a collaborative experience, you know, so.
It's true. And there's also no better move than owning your own content, Michael Taylor.
Yeah. Yes, queen. I've always owned my own content, honey. Oh, so it seemed. Some of it was rented. Yeah. What a joy. When I got contacted by your people, because, you know, Levi Christ, ladies and gentlemen, Levi Christ has people. No, he's got an entourage. He's got people. You know, my people call your people. Yeah, so one of his persons contacted me and said, oh, Hadestown, you know, is there something in there you think that would be newsworthy or for your show, for IMRU in particular? And I went, there's a Levi Christ in there. He would be so I was like, wow. And so I'm so grateful for this time, because I am too.
Yeah. It's so fun to reconnect with you and that we got to do this.
And I'm proud of you. I feel like you're my child. My little baby all grown up. Yeah. I'm so proud of you. I am so proud of you. I make no bones about it. You're living your full, authentic life with sprinkles on top of it, you know. So, and colorful, jazz hands and, yes,
sugary
jazz hands and
sprinkles. Spirit fingers.
Oh, sugary, honey. Well, your husband knows. I'm sure he does. So,
he does. Yeah. 12 years we've been together. 13 wow. this November. 3 years married, and I went back to my little small town and had the wedding. Made everybody have to deal with it.
Did you make somebody make the cake who didn't want to, but the hat anyway?
No, we actually were very surprised that even in my small town of Tennessee, even the clerk giving us the certificate, the cake maker, and everybody was just so happy for us. I was like, well, I was looking for a fight. Why is everybody okay with me?
There was not one bless your heart in any of that?
No, not at all. Just, you know, just a couple cousins who didn't want to show up for something so vile, but that's kind of it, really.
Well, kudos to you. Kudos to your town. And always be willing to be surprised. As hard as we have to fight for who we are and to be visibly who we are and vocally who we are, it's so important that you be willing to be surprised that there are people out there who evolve.
Yeah. Life is different now. Like, it's different now. And especially the generation that's coming up behind us, the generations that are coming up behind us. I have to remind my old school self to not go into a situation ready to fight, because 9 times out of 10 now, nobody cares.
Yeah. Where can we find you other than your glorious website at levichrist.com?
Thank you.
Yeah. Let me say that cleanly. L-E-V-I-K-R-E-I-S, right?
Yes.
.com.
Yes.
And then where else can we find you and not stalk you?
I would love everyone to head over to Instagram at Levi Christ. It's easy to find. And if anyone is interested in the upcoming new season of my spiritual, motivational, inspirational podcast called Imagine Paradise, you can subscribe to that on any podcast platform.
Are you at the Piana when you're doing that?
No,
or is it
I'm
just
not.
It's just talking?
There's a season. Last season, I actually took every week a song of mine and not only gave you the backstory of what created it, but then dove into the spiritual principle behind it. And I would sit at the piano and sing parts of it. It was an interesting season. People really enjoyed that season because I did do that entire season near the piano.
You are a spiritual sprinkler. Cannot thank you enough for being who you are and for who you've yet to become. Please come back whenever you can, and let's stay in touch. Let's not let 21 years go by.
Okay. We have the digits now. So
that's right.
Let's do that. I'll see you in Los Angeles, and thank you for talking with me today.
My pleasure. Hadestown will also perform at the Segerstrom Center for the Arts in Costa Mesa, California, from August 9th to the 21st. For more info, go to scfta.org.
Food for thought. A child born the night Michael Taylor Gray met Levi Christ can legally drink now. Say what? Don't go away. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Bayard Rustin, Martin Luther King's mentor, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Bayard Rustin was a major player in the civil rights movement. He planned the 1963 March on Washington, which brought more than 200,000 people to the nation's capital to demonstrate for civil rights. It was there that Martin Luther King Jr. gave his I Have a Dream speech. Rustin was much influenced by a trip he took to India in 1948, where he learned of Mahatma Gandhi's success with nonviolent activism. When he became Martin Luther King's major advisor and mentor, Rustin inspired King to dedicate himself to fighting by nonviolent means. Because Rustin was known to be gay, many white and African American leaders insisted King distance himself from Rustin. This forced Rustin to work behind the scenes, but he nonetheless had a paramount role in the effort to end racial segregation and racial discrimination. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Andrea Westcott.
Hi, I'm David Sedaris, advising you to listen to the longest-running homosexual radio program in Southern California. I am. Are you?
Well, what kind of bar is this? Why aren't there any women in here? It's a what? It's a gay bar. Well, hell, I've had a little fun with the fellas now and then, but you know, if you're gonna have a bar, you gotta have ladies. Well, of course you can buy me a drink.
Welcome back. I'm David Hunt, and you're listening to IMRU Radio Magazine. A one-time IMRU reporter, Keith Butler, is an actor and author of Little Black Gay Boy, an unapologetic memoir of surviving, coming out, and recovering.
I grew up in a small town called Windsor, Virginia, north of Virginia Beach. We only had card catalogs, and there was nothing about gay-related anything that was in the card catalog as I was trying to figure out who I was. And so when I wrote this book, it was my way of there being a resource now and past when I'm gone, that a little black gay boy in a rural area will go to the internet and say, I'm a little black gay boy, and my book will come up. And I feel that is my way of helping to advance the community, because here will be a person who can read the stories and the struggles that I went through and some of the bad decisions that I made and was able to come out of that, but understand that their decisions that they don't have to make and their struggles that they don't have to go through, because I came through on the other side of it.
In your book, you reveal how your privacy was violated many times by family who read your journals without your permission. So why write a memoir? Why is telling your life story important to us and to you?
Now was the time to tell the story. After all that I've been through, especially not just with the childhood and growing up with the abuse in my childhood and the things that I experienced, but also through my recovery, being a meth addict and coming out of that, which is not very typical, especially for meth addicts to recover from that particular substance. Telling this story, I made the decision that when I was going to write this book for a person to understand my life, that I had to tell the whole truth. I had to tell everything. When I was keeping journals, at that time it was private. It was just about my personal thoughts, my personal dreams and fantasies, explorations. But this gave me the opportunity to share everything that I personally wanted to share so that I could help somebody else along the way. And there have been a few people who have picked up this book who have known me for a long time, but had no idea of the life that I have lived or the things that I have been through. And they say, I understand. I now understand why you fight so hard for the underdog. I now understand why children are so important to you, and that you fight for children who are abused, and you fight for the opportunity for people to see an individual, not just see them for who's standing in front of you, but know that there's a story behind that person.
How did your awareness of I was different affect your perception of the world around you as a young boy?
Growing up as a little black gay boy in a rural area, there were no other gay people around me. I didn't have the luxury of seeing it on television to identify in a positive way. When I saw it on television, it was to make fun of or to demean in every way possible. I didn't have anything to turn to say, oh, that's what I am. The only words that I ever heard, I didn't hear gay or same gender loving at that time. All I heard was sissy and faggot. Those were the words that I heard. And those were not words that were used in a positive way. They were used as very derogatory, negative, and hurtful. I knew something was different about me when I would watch The Young and the Restless, and there was a character named Brad, and he was in a Speedo at a pool. And I got so aroused emotionally and physically. And I probably was about 5 or 6 at that time. In my mind, this isn't normal for a boy to feel this way, because I had nothing else to tell me that it was normal and natural for me to have that attraction. I grew up around girls, so I learned double dutch and hopscotch and bobby jacks and all the girl things, and I felt comfortable in that. So there was nothing that made me feel different about that, but I knew that none of the other boys in the neighborhood were double dutching and bobby jacks and hopscotching. You know, that was not what they were doing.
You mentioned early on in your book, Little Black Gay Boy, that exploring sex is fun. It's not your fault that you want to figure sex out. Why did you feel compelled to make that particular statement in your book?
When I was realizing that there was abuse that had happened in my life, and I knew that it was holding me back and causing me to react in certain ways in relationships, I was like, I couldn't understand why I was hesitant in some relationships or why I was fearful. I couldn't understand what was holding me back from opening my heart to allow love to really be there. Like, I didn't trust people. I didn't trust that somebody wanted to love me as me. I only thought that they wanted something from me, because that was what I learned. And when I got into therapy, I walked into, you know, therapy sessions always thinking, well, I put myself in places and I put myself in situations where I knew what I was doing. I was exploring sex and sexuality. A lot of the abuse, I blamed myself for it until my therapist, he said, let me ask you a question. At that age, would they have given you the keys to drive the car? Would they have left you in a kitchen to cook on a hot stove by yourself? And I said, no. He says, well, if they wouldn't allow you to make those decisions, why was it okay for them to allow you to make sexual decisions that you couldn't make at that age? They made for you. And so that's the reason why I understood that all of it was not my fault. It was not my fault. Even if I did put myself in situations, there were adults that should have known better to say, no, that's not what's going to happen here. And then have a conversation with me and explain to me why that was not a good thing, not to chastise me or punish me for the exploration, but to actually, you know, have an opportunity to teach me. And that may have given me an opportunity to learn about sexuality in more of a positive way, as opposed to I have to sneak around and do this behind closed doors, or I have to keep this a secret or under a rock.
Many of us in our community have or had that one family member who loved and embraced us for who we are. And for you, that was your Aunt Sally. How was Aunt Sally significant in your life?
See, now you're going to make me cry.
Well, that's what we're here for.
I don't even know how to explain the gift that Aunt Sally was to me. A gift in a way that was much deeper than I could have even have imagined. In the book, I talk about when I make the decision to come out to her. You know, after my family has pushed me out of the closet, they have ridiculed me, they've called the cops, they've done all these things to me. And I was told by my mother, never tell Aunt Sally. You know, Aunt Sally raised me and she always loved me. And she always made sure that I had the best. And she always made sure that even if it was her last, that she would give it to me. And even when she died, that story is in the book, Aunt Sally Met God, she gave me a gift, even on her deathbed. And so when I went to come out to her, it overtook me that here's a woman who lived out in the country, who only watched one TV station, got her news from that station, got her entertainment from that station, and she went to bed. And she worked as a janitor. And for her to say to me, I can't fault you for who you are, because you were born that way. When nobody else in my family ever said that, it was the one time that I knew that not only did God love me, that she loved me.
Keith Butler was inducted into the Chicago LGBT Hall of Fame. How did this come about?
When I moved back to Chicago, I got immediately involved with fundraisers for HIV/AIDS, for the AIDS life cycle, for organizations in recovery who were doing fundraisers to raise more money to have conferences and things around recovery. So one day I was about to MC an event for, believe it or not, the police department here in Chicago. It was the lesbian and gay police force. They were doing a fundraiser. And I saw a lot of people that I knew were on the board for the Hall of Fame. And as I was sitting there, one of the people said, we're all here because we wanted to come and personally tell you that we have considered you one of our next inductees into the Chicago LGBT Hall of Fame. And I literally broke down crying because I knew that the Hall of Fame was a prestigious honor, because the people who are in the Hall of Fame here in Chicago, these people have done some of the most amazing things for our community. And to be considered in that group of people, that was a big honor for me. All I could say was, you all see me in that light. And they say, everything that you do, we see.
Where can we find more information about your book?
Some reviews are on Amazon, and I am on Facebook. So anybody can go to Facebook and find Keith Butler in Chicago. And Acta Publications is my publisher, ACTA. They have the book on their website as well.
Thank you so much, Keith, for coming on to IMRU and telling us about your wonderful, wonderful memoir, A Little Black Gay Boy, and sharing a part of your life with us today.
Thank you.
That concludes our Chicago sojourn, but there's still time for a last word. And tonight, that's an audio essay from Abby Dees. That's an audio essay from Charlie Bauer.
A little while back, my partner and I spent a few days in Big Sur, the jewel of the California coast.
we hoped we might slough off some accumulated stress and maybe, maybe, detach from the chatter and whirr of our daily lives. It seemed to work. With meandering creeks and ancient redwoods on one side and an impossibly huge expanse of Pacific Ocean on the other, Big Sur invited us to do nothing but sit and soak it in, first staring one way, then the other, and back again. The awesomeness, and I mean that in its original non-Kardashian sense, defied words, except for, you know, awesome. There was only silence between the two of us, broken up by the occasional and feeble, "God, aren't we lucky to be here?" At an overlook, I even said this to a total stranger who replied, "I was just thinking that. What a blessing." Sure, you can spend massive amounts of money for a cliffside room in Big Sur, but you don't need to. A car, a day off, and a willingness to accept whatever the day presents is pretty much all any Californian needs to be reminded of why everyone has heard of our state. Now, I'm a lifelong Californian, and this was only my second time in Big Sur. I'm an idiot, but that's not quite my point. Perhaps my point is, rather, that though there are few places grander on earth, Big Sur reminded me that moments of appreciation for life's gifts are available all the time if I'd only summon the comparatively paltry energy to seek them out. In short, it's not the view, but my willingness to see it. In the midst of our gee whiz reverie, I got an email from a friend we both love very much. He described in detail his regret about the lost opportunities of his life, and he despaired that the choices he made didn't pan out as planned. His boyhood dreams mock him now. We wondered how he would have felt if he were sitting there with us, watching the sun go down. Would it be as bad? It's not that we didn't take his sadness seriously. We did. Our hearts ached for him, and if we could have magically changed the past, we would have. But here we were, with dramatic proof that regardless of every hurt and insult, for most of us, it is possible at least to make the choice to stop, breathe, and experience beauty. It's there for the taking. Our friend still possessed the power of choice, and much more too. Security, health, freedom, and the love of some people in his life. Though much still lies ahead of him, I sensed that he could only see the past, which I do not deny was marked by injustice and pain. I know, though, that he is still a fortunate man. Really, my only wish for him is that he could feel it every once in a while, as Tracy and I did that week in Big Sur, and as we vowed to stop and notice more often, even when we're not in places that practically hit you over the head with something to be grateful for. Since this essay is supposed to have an LGBT theme, I'll now try to share what I think any of this has to do with our community. We're nowhere near where we know we should be when it comes to civil rights. In some places in the world, we're even going backwards. Russia, Nigeria, I'm talking to you. Many of us are still isolated in unsupportive communities or shunned by the very people we love. We should be fighting any urge to rest on the laurels of our latest amazing victories, and there have been a few. Gratitude for what's good, however, is something else entirely. To everyone, every day, whoever summoned the courage to stand up for justice, even when things appeared hopeless, I truly thank you for the freedom I too often take for granted. To every parent who chose to embrace your LGBT kid, even if you didn't understand the LGBT part, I thank you for tilting the universal scales a little more towards love. No matter what lies ahead, good or bad, may we all feel loved, blessed, fortunate, lucky, whatever you want to call it, and awed by the simple beauty of life on a regular basis. This is Abby Dees.
This is Abby Dees, and this commentary was based on my syndicated column, Thinking Out Loud, distributed by Q Syndicate.
Okay, that's it for tonight. I'm David Hunt. Our thanks to IMRU's executive producer, Steve Pride, and our guests, Keith Butler and Levi Kreis. Please follow us on Facebook at IMRU Radio. And if you're interested in volunteering with IMRU in any capacity, email public at prideonscreen.com. www.thelongestrunningpodcast.com. And a reminder, we're a global podcast as well as a show broadcast by KPFK Los Angeles. And you can always hear our weekly show posted to kpfk.org. Also, catch us at iTunes, Spotify, Breaker, Anchor.fm, CastBox, and Pocket Cast. I'm David Hunt. You can find me online at tellmedavid.com. So long, and thanks for listening.
My mama told me when I was young, we were all born superstars. She rolled my hair, put my lipstick on, in the glass of her boudoir. There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe. So hold your head up, girl, and you'll go far. Listen to me when I say, no matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, shoulder or Oreo made, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to be brave. I'm beautiful in my way, 'cause God makes no mistakes. I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way. Don't hide yourself in regret, just love yourself and you said, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way.
Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be.
Give yourself prudence and love your friends, so we can rejoice the truth. In the religion of the insecure, I must be myself, respect my youth. A different lover is not a sin, believe capital H I am. I love my life, I love this record, and me, I'm all yeah, valet, fayay. No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, shoulder or Oreo made, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to be brave. I'm beautiful in my way, 'cause God makes no mistakes. I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way. Don't hide yourself in regret, just love yourself and you said, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born on this way.
Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Whether you're broke or evergreen, you're black, white, beige, Chola descent, you're Lebanese, you're Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast, bullied, tease, rejoice and love yourself today, 'cause baby, you were born
this way. No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white or beige, Chola or Orient made, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to be brave. I'm beautiful in my way, 'cause God makes no mistakes. I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way. Don't hide yourself in regret, just love yourself and you said, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way. Oh, there ain't no other way, baby, I was born this way. Baby, I was born this way. Oh, there ain't no other way, baby, I was born this way. Right track, baby, I was born this way. Oh, there ain't no other way, baby, I was born this way. Baby, I was born this way. Oh, there ain't no other way, baby, I was born this way. Right track, baby, I was born this way.